This week, the precious metals sector shone brightly with gold closing at the highest weekly point in a month. Well, welcome back to Gold Seek Radio, everyone. Your host, Chris Walczek. We've got a Muy Grande-sized show lined up for you. Investors dumped U.S. stocks, sending the Dow plunging over 1,400 points for the week on new trade tariffs with China. And a threat of government shutdown. Nothing makes precious metals more attractive than uncertainty, and investors plowed into gold and silver, and especially their shares. Is this the cusp of the big breakout we've all been waiting for over a year? Joining me with his thoughts on gold and silver, Bill Murphy from Gotta.org. We discussed that Russia recently added tons of silver to its national stockpile, maybe setting a new precedent. And then on to billionaires. That's right, just one of the 1,425 billionaires, according to Forbes, could erupt a short squeeze in the silver market. And while everyone's talking about Bitcoin and altcoins, has anyone even bothered to note that without silver circuitry, all of that Bitcoin mining equipment and GPUs, they wouldn't exist. 37 U.S. states have now passed legislation to restore gold and silver to its original status outlined in the Constitution. The latest, Wyoming and Alabama. And the trend in gold repatriation continues unabated, with Hungary the next to demand the return of its sovereign gold stockpile. Then Peter Schiff rejoins us with his thoughts on gold and silver. He's expecting a renaissance in 2018. Goldman Sachs recently launched a Bitcoin trading desk and announced plans for institutional custodial services. This could help direct hundreds of billions of new dollars from deep institutional pockets into the crypto space, which is currently less than $500 billion. That may sound like a lot, but you can compare that with gold, which is roughly $8 trillion, 16 times larger market than the cryptos. So plenty of room to grow there. Will that send us to 40,000 this year on Bitcoin? Perhaps and perhaps not, but one top analyst, Tika Tiwari, outlines a compelling case for 40 to 50,000 this year. And keep in mind, last year we had a 20-fold peak to trough move, so a 4-fold in comparison wouldn't be that big of a magnitude of difference. Remember, we'd like to take your questions and comments. You can call in 641-715-3900, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You'll need our mailbox number, 514049. Please jot it down on a Post-it pad or plug it right into your iPhone or Android. 641-715-3900, mailbox 514049. Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest must-hear report. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Nary a cloud was seen over the precious metal sector this week on increased inflation comments from the FOMC meeting on Wednesday and Thursday. Higher prices increases demand for safe haven assets, despite the quarter point rate hike announcement this week. The current Fed funds futures indicate zero odds of a rate hike at the next FOMC meeting slated for May, but then 81% odds of another quarter point rate hike at the June FOMC meeting. Still, the world's best inflation safe haven added $37, 3%, finishing at $13.50, holding solidly above support and in earshot of new bull market highs. Meanwhile, silver picked up 31 cents, ending at $16.58, and the precious metal share index was about the only equities index to close in the plus column this week, other than maybe black gold shares. West Texas added 40 cents, closing at $62.41 a barrel, still on track for my 65 to 75 forecast. The Bitcoin ETF finished at around 1372, just slightly lower. The top story moving the markets this week, gold blasted off the launch pad to the highest level in over a month on the heels of a potential global trade war and U.S. government shutdown. On Wednesday, the FOMC raised interest rates as expected. Policymakers noted inflationary signs that turned investors away from equities and into safe haven investments. Then on Thursday, additional tariffs of at least $50 billion on China, that's the world's second largest economy and our number one trade partner, as one might expect, China's Commerce Ministry said it would impose a $3 billion tariff on U.S. goods, citing a violation of global trade rules. Increasing the appetite for gold, the president tweeted that he might veto the $1.3 trillion spending bill that had passed earlier to forestall a government shutdown, again increasing uncertainty in the financial markets. But then the president reversed this announcement, and the government shutdown was scheduled for Saturday if the veto had gone through. Precious metals, bottom line, and Bitcoin. The bullion oil market and the CRB commodity sector helped us this week. Precious metals were up across the board. The technical position is even more bullish now on U.S. dollar weakness, and particularly in the new strength in silver and XAU shares. Regarding Bitcoin, I'm still bullish long term, but traders have to hold that 8,000 level support over the weekend, or again, retest of lows and perhaps even lower. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, heavy cloud cover appeared over the New York Stock Exchange this week. By Friday's close, the Dow was off an astounding 1,413 points, 5.6%, closing at 23,533. The S&P was off 165.6% at 2,588, and the NASDAQ was off 6.5%, almost 500 points, finishing just shy of 7,000. Meanwhile, U.S. shares turned mixed on Friday as tariff-related concerns persisted, although durable goods orders were up sharply, more than expected at over 3%. Inflation scares really spooked the markets. Durable goods orders were nearly twice expected, with year-over-year new orders leaping 9%, while new home sales were about in line, but still 620,000. Elsewhere, protectionist trade policies tend to be inflationary, and that just fueled the flames of fears over higher prices. Trade skirmishes can damage U.S. exports, and with our lower U.S. dollar, we'd had a relative trade advantage. So that could actually dampen a lot of the expectations that investors had had, especially if a full-blown trade war were to come to pass. Meanwhile, stocks in the news Friday included industrial supplier DXP Enterprise, that's DXPE. It gained 2% on heavy volume. Quarterly earnings were higher, 36%, about five times what was expected. And Lockheed Martin rebounded sharply. That's been a favorite pick of the alpha stocks candidates. And anything that can rebound sharply in this type of market, you know there's something positive going on there. The Lockheed F-35 jet maker gained 3% at about 340 on heavy volume. And the Street.com expects earnings to grow for Lockheed at around 13%, $15.55 a share, into 2019. The aerospace giant has still added about 4% for the year. That's twice the S&P 500. U.S. shares, bottom line. Well, clearly the new cold trade war, I'm calling it, between the U.S. and China was disturbing to many investors. The market is now digesting this week's rate hike and factoring in the upcoming June rate hike, which appears imminent. Plus, the USA Today Greed to Fear Index dropped to the lowest point, I think, almost possible. It's practically zero, indicating extreme fear. So from a contrarian perspective, that should lead to a rebound rally in the next few weeks. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio. It's a pleasure to welcome back Bill Murphy, head of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, exposing the gold market manipulation schemes on behalf of all global gold investors. And welcome back, Bill Murphy.
Good to be here, Chris. Thanks for thinking of me.
According to one of our favorite analysts, this could be the lowest level of institutional silver shorting.
That shifted a little bit last week, and we'll see tomorrow what the latest news is. All I know is, as I've been talking about and reporting on for years now, the high silver open interest has been the one critical negative that you can see all the time in the silver market. On the COMEX, it's just the other day, it was 216,000 contracts. And up until a spike in 2016, the old all-time high of silver open interest was 193,000. And normally when you have a market that is disappearing in price, the specs go away. And there's no hedging because you can't lock, there's no profits to lock in, and just interest disappears. This is the most unusual situation in history when it comes to market action and open interest. You know, as we've talked many times, I'm a $100 silver guy, and the action has been the worst I've ever seen in any market in 40 years. something's going to change to blow it up, and it'll probably come out of nowhere. And your guy may be right, and I hope he is. All I know is I'm expecting something spectacular, but again, the action's just terrible. You get, finally moved, gets a move yesterday, gets out of the weeds, and the gold cartel takes it right down, right back in the tank today when silver should have been flying today based on other markets.
The market adage, you know, since time immemorial is never short that dull market. And silver has just been so dull for 2 years. Maybe not. It's just a market looking for a reason to explode higher. Maybe this is one of the things that'll send it higher. We hear Putin has added silver to his national stockpile. The Russian authorities, they actually have pictures all over the web. 70, 73 pound bars, roughly 1,000 ounces, starting to fill up in their coffers. They recognize the incredible opportunity here. It's a strategic metal. It's real money. It's sound money. And so that leads us to the JP Morgan Chase story. They also have now the world's largest physical stockpile. COMEX silver futures is supposedly the reason why they have this stockpile. That, according to the work of your colleague, Chris Powell, he points out what's happened is when JP Morgan acquired Bear Stearns, they had a massive short position. That is at least the unofficial reason why they have this massive 130 million ounce stockpile of silver.
People have been talking about JP Morgan's huge visible position, whether it's theirs or a client's, who knows. For all these 2 years you're talking about of silver being in oblivion. And that's a fact. Could it be potentially bullish, incredibly bullish? Should it be? Theoretically, yes. But this open interest position, Morgan accumulated silver over years. That's another story into itself. But they're throwing it out there, and the market action gets worse and worse. Now, again, I'm looking for $100 silver. The action's terrible, and I keep looking for something that says, we have a change coming. And I guess it's going to probably turn out that we won't see a change coming. One day, silver will just go bonkers, and they'll be under panic market conditions, and the shorts are going to be forced to cover. But until that time comes, it's going to be one agonizing month after another. To make the big money that's coming, you're going to have to be in it and be on board before it happens, because paying up will only be for the very big momentum traders. Everyone else will wait for the dip that won't come.
For those of us who remember 1980, 79, 80, and those lock limit up days, this is a much larger global economy with far greater access, you might say 5 to 10 times. And there's zillions more dollars in liquidity and deep pockets and institutions, pension funds, all of that demand could send things. Just one billionaire could send silver flying, and now we have thousands. And that brings me to Keith Neumeyer. I'm sure you're familiar. First Majestic Silver, we've had him here on the show. He's been a good friend to Goldseek for a long time. He had an interesting interview at Cambridge House. Of course, you know, he's wildly bullish. All this talk about cobalt and, you know, these other battery favorable metals that has caught the attention of the markets, important for this new industrial revolution. But he says what's being overlooked is the important significance of silver. You can't even mine Bitcoin without silver. You can't have a computer or an iPhone or an Android to transfer your Bitcoin. You can't even have an online discussion, because all your computers, your keyboards, your mouse, your telephone, your internet connectivity based on a network of silver.
Well, there's no finer guy in the industry than Keith Neumeyer, and he's one of the few executives out there, not to talk about the way it really is in terms of the manipulation and suppression by J.P. Morgan. It's made, had his company suffer terribly over the past many months and many others, and how they've driven silver into oblivion. He couldn't be more right about why the price of silver is going to go bonkers someday as soon as they lose control of it, which is why they're selling so much paper silver down at these low prices to keep it under control. Once they lose control, and I've said it many times in your show, if we take out 21, it's going to go to, you know, $100 per ounce faster than anybody can imagine. No doubt in my mind. We've already been to 50 twice in the past 38 years, and it's just a matter of time. But on a day-to-day basis, it couldn't be, it's the most boring commodity in the history of markets. It's just awful. I don't say that to be negative. I'm looking for it to explode again out of nowhere. Keith Neumeyer is going to be right. And for many reasons, if you need that silver in your product, and it's, whether it's 21, 31, or 71, you have to have it, whatever the price is. And it, because it's not, in many cases, it's not a big component, it won't really matter that much. But you have to have the supply. And that's when the panic kicks in.
When you look at the numbers and you see that there's actually less silver above ground, considerably less than gold, the most underappreciated, ignored opportunity since Bitcoin around 1 to 10 cents. I could have bought a warehouse full of silver with a handful of Bitcoin.
Chris, once we break the 21 mark, it will trade like a Bitcoin, you know, did on the upside, and it's going to be spectacular. Getting from here to there is the issue because it's becoming so tedious. I mean, the years are going by, and, you know, pretty soon it'll be a decade. I mean, that's a long time to be going nowhere.
You brought up the idea of trouble that this has caused at low prices. I mean, many producers now, silver producers, they are having trouble remaining profitable. I mean, I believe Neumeier in a recent Cambridge House interview also pointed out that they had been operating in the red for several months, simply having to become, you know, lean and mean, right? You have to cut out everything that's non-essential. We've all had it in the last 6-7 years. I talked to a major guest we had on the show yesterday, said his sales in the industry down 80%. That actually is a self-righting mechanism because as the players drop out, obviously, supply dwindles and you have much greater demand and higher prices moving forward.
But that's why the open interest should have been collapsing in silver, not going back to close, you know, going to the all-time high levels. It is ludicrous. That's how rigged and bad this is. It's getting worse, not better. That's why before it's going to go, they're going to have to blow up.
I can't think of a more ridiculous market to try and manipulate than the world's most inelastic market. Rig timber or something that's renewable. Don't rig a market that has the most inelastic supply and most inelastic demand. And incidentally, it's at the greatest shortage. You know, rising U.S. interest rates, a big topic. Usually that's not the best sign for the precious metals. But a lot of analysts are saying, no, 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 this time is different. It's closer to the 1970s, looking at a stagflation-like slowdown with just a worst of worlds, rising prices. Plus, we have this overhang of debt that is just crushing the middle and working classes, and now approaching $22 trillion with the T, U.S. national debt. This could bump up demand for the precious metals. Any thoughts?
Yeah, well, Chris, all these reasons, again, gets back to what I talk about in my stuff all the time, the gold cartel. What they've done to create artificially low prices in gold and silver. All these reasons are so bullish for gold, but price action, you know, makes market commentary. So they force it down, they get people out, they do what we've talked about in silver and in gold, and they get people to run from the hills as other assets have all been soaring over a period of time, and people are just disgusted. All these reasons are so bullish for gold and silver, and they will manifest themselves. It's just the bad guys are going to have to blow up this time. I don't think you're going to have a bull market anymore like we've seen in past years and decades. It's just going to be explosive and happen overnight. That's my opinion. But the more this goes on, the more I believe it. Sometime about Newton's law, about equal and opposite reactions. This has been so horrible, what they've done, and egregious, that the reaction is going to be just as dramatic, except it'll happen quick and very fast, and the next thing you know, it's very hard to buy gold and silver.
You know, I like your it's different this time thesis, or why it could be different this time. I mean, that whole hypothesis, I think, is gaining a lot of traction from the headlines that we just find out that Iran has completely pulled the rug out on the dollar. No more greenback. No more reserve currency. In the past, been de facto preparation for war. If you wanted to go to war with the U.S., that's numero uno. Let's take a look at Venezuela. They make hyperinflation look like a fun day at the park. Their currency is gone. There's actually talk of trying to pick up the greenback there. I doubt that's going to happen. The next thing we hear out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, once again, our Western states, officials, and policymakers have the right idea. Sound money in Wyoming, Legal Tender Act became law. The bill restores constitutional sound money in Wyoming. This is a trend that's continuing because we even hear Alabama, the 37th state to exempt its sales of gold, silver, platinum, palladium, bullion from any sales tax. It's a war of attrition. What's the tipping point? What's going to send us over the edge? Any ideas?
Well, that's the key word, tipping point. That's it. What is going to be the tipping point when all of a sudden, when nothing means anything for gold and silver, it all means everything all at once? Know what that tipping point is going to be, except my opinion is that it's just going to happen out of nowhere. Something just triggers it, and then off we go, and the bad guys, the gold cartel, are going to be forced to cover or run for the hills or step back, everything will have changed. And it's hard to imagine now, but that's what I think it's going to take, and it's coming. We just don't know when, and it'll probably be when we least expect it.
Exactly. I mean, look at what we see with the central banks. Okay, we're seeing a run on gold. As you know, the Hungarian bank, of course, 100,000 ounces, 3/10. Still, it's a trend, about $130 million at current prices, probably several trillion if it were at its equilibrium price unfettered. The Austrian, German, Dutch, all of these central banks have called back theirs, and Hungary is just one of the latest. Of course, Venezuela was well known while Chavez was still in power and alive. So this trend continues. It's a slow motion panic. They know what's going on. They know the gig is almost up. I don't think they trust the West to manage their gold anymore. They know all this nonsense that's going on in the derivatives markets and probably fear that their gold will be leased.
Yeah, or just, I mean, not only just leased out, there's fears of it being confiscated. It's very important to keep this in mind. And you mentioned the Russians before again, and I said on times at your show, I mean, they know exactly what Gata knows. They've followed us closely. They've mentioned Gata over the years. They know what we know about what's going on, and they keep increasing their reserves. And now you're hearing about Russia and silver. It really is something else, what's occurring behind the scenes there. Actually, it's not even behind the scenes anymore because they announced what they're accumulating. All this is going to add up in one day. As you mentioned, we're going to reach the tipping point, and then, boom, everything changes.
So let's give Hugo Salinas Price the last word on today's show, if we could. We all are rooting for America. After all, we're patriots, every one of us. We want the restoration of a sound, constitutionally based money that is our right, that the promise, it's what the founders insisted on, who weren't terribly happy with King George. And we're going to have a little startup called the United States. And we're actually going to use real money. Hugo Salinas Price says, if the dollar is no longer to be the world's reserve currency, the only replacement will be gold. And we're on the cusp of it. All right, Bill Murphy, can you tell us more, please, about La Metropole Cafe?
Yeah, people can sign up for a 2-week free trial if they like, see if it's a value. And my colleague Chris Powell at Gata.org does a great job there. He's over in Asia now, getting ready to make some presentations in different countries to spread what Gata knows and what's really going on in the market. It's some journey. It'll be 20 years in another few months. Thank you, Chris.
Peter Schiff, chairman of Schiff Gold, located at schiffgold.com, author of several must-read bestsellers. Welcome back, Peter.
Well, thanks for welcoming me back. Yeah, you know, certainly the first bubble to bust were the cryptos, right? They made new record highs, I think, December of last year. I'm not sure if they made a new high in January, but the bust started pretty early in the year. And in fact, some of these cryptocurrencies are down 70-80% or more from their highs. So, you know, and these are currencies that, of course, were way, way up. And in fact, they're still up. I mean, all these currencies that are down 70-80%, you know, they're still up from where they were a year ago. So there's still a lot of air left to come out of the crypto bubble. But I do believe that we've popped. I think we've most likely seen the highs. And it doesn't mean there's not going to be rallies. There'll be plenty of rallies, but I think the trend is down. And I think ultimately we're going to see complete collapse. And, you know, maybe it'll happen before the end of the year. So that bubble is bursting. The bond bubble, that started to burst, I think, in February. And the stock market bubble probably too. We had a huge decline. We had about a 10% drop in the stock market in about a week. Of course, it recovered a good chunk of that. The NASDAQ went on to make a new high. But I certainly, around the time of the top, and I was saying this on my podcast, that all the classic signs of a mania were there. I mean, because I couldn't turn on the television without hearing people talk about Bitcoin. You know, everybody was talking about it. It was the hottest topic. It was all over. I mean, conversations. I mean, people, I was running into people who were talking about it. So it was like, hey, this has got to be it. How more obvious does it get? You know, I just wish that I had, you know, that I had taken this bubble more seriously years ago. I could have made a fortune if I'd have bought into the, you know, Bitcoin when it was, you know, a few dollars a coin to hold on for that ride. I mean, obviously, yeah, of course, all the money that I would have made would have been at the expense of other suckers who would have bought my overpriced Bitcoin. So it would have been a gigantic transfer of wealth. I mean, at least I would have been on the receiving end of it.
You have brought up here in the past how your family emigrated from Europe. What would we have all done if we'd been caught behind enemy lines in 1939, maybe Warsaw, something along those lines? And you've made some really interesting parallels to the usefulness of gold. But now, fast forward to today, we all agree gold, it's the ballast in your portfolio. Wouldn't it be great to have a means to leave the continental United States if suddenly, I don't know, a dictator came into power here with just, you know, your private keys memorized on your Bitcoin?
Yes, the only question is, what will those Bitcoins be worth when you get there? You know, so it's great in theory. Yes, I can move my wealth out of the country very easily, assuming that the wealth is still there when you want to leave the country. That is the big gamble, because you're putting your faith into basically nothing, right? It's a complete, it's all based on confidence and the ultimate fiat currency, right? It's all a function of, does everybody believe it has value? I mean, I would personally rather have my gold stored offshore, knowing that I can get access to that gold from anywhere in the world. So I don't, you know, if I buy gold and I have it stored in Switzerland or Singapore or, you know, Dubai or Australia, that gold is there, you know, and I don't have to physically go to Australia to get my gold from Australia. I can go wherever I want and I can have it shipped to me. Or, you know, I don't even have to have it shipped to me. I can sell it and I can use the proceeds, or I can even use the gold as a medium of exchange, you know. So it's there. And of course, you know, you could wear, you know, you could buy gold jewelry and wear it. You know, I just, you know, I picked up about $20,000 worth of jewelry for my wife from Menee, you know, MENE.com. And, you know, the beauty of buying that is jewelry. I mean, they're very nice necklaces, you know, different earrings and bracelets. But, I mean, I'm not just buying jewelry. I'm buying gold. I'm buying 24 karat gold, which, you know, you can wear it on a plane and you don't have to declare it. I mean, if you're wearing $20,000 worth of gold jewelry, you know, obviously I can sell that for $20,000 as 24 karat gold, but I don't have to. I just bought some cufflinks. I bought two cufflinks for myself. I think they're $5,000 for the cufflinks, but it's almost all gold. I mean, I can melt it down. It's 24 karat gold cufflinks, but you don't have to declare that. You get on a plane, you don't have to declare that as currency, but it is. Gold to me, I have a lot more faith in something real, something tangible, something that's been around for thousands of years and has been valued, you know, by so many different societies and cultures. It's not like it's just something that Americans want. This is worldwide. I mean, gold is valued in India. It's valued in China. I mean, you know, and this is where the middle classes are growing. Demand is growing. I mean, cryptocurrencies, yeah, you got a bunch of millennials who like them because they think they can get rich quick. It's interesting, too, about today. I mean, because, you know, the Fed, I forget when you air the interview. Yeah, but because at 2 o'clock we get the Fed's decision on rates. Everybody expects them to hike by another quarter point. Yet gold's up about $15 this morning. I mean, I rarely see gold up on the morning of a rate hike. I mean, so people sold the rumor of the rate hike, and now they're buying before the fact. Can't even wait till the fact. I mean, let's see if this indicates something. Oil, too. Oil up over $1.50. Crude oil back over $65 a barrel. So we're seeing strength in oil. We're seeing strength in gold on a day the Fed's going to hike rates. And, of course, the dollar is down. Dollar index, you know, back down right about at 90. But looking very, very weak to me. You know, the bond market, I mean, we had a big move down. We've been consolidating, but the yield now on the 10-year is right back at 2.9. You know, once we take out 3%, I think we can have a quick move to 3.25, 3.5. You know, the markets, I don't think, can handle that. And, of course, that's not going to be the top. I mean, rates have to go much, much higher. Look at the budget deficits that we're about to have. You know, the national debt last week skyrocketed above $21 trillion. It's going to break $22 trillion this calendar year. I mean, you know, we're going to go from $20 trillion to $22 trillion in the same, you know, 2018. The trade deficits are exploding. I mean, you know, this is, you know, you can't finance these kind of debts. You know, interest rates have just got to go way up.
Interest rates, a topic I'd like to get to a bit later here in the discussion, because obviously that's ubiquitous. It's going to impact every area. We've got record student loans. We've got record defaults across the board. Auto loans, student loans at risk. This is multi-trillion dollar, could topple the economy. Before we do, I'd like to just kind of circle back to the cryptos, because you certainly can recognize a lot of these core developers here. No schmageggies, okay, if you will. I mean, these are pretty sharp folks. They obviously see institutional money lining up. Because, you know, up until recently, we just haven't had the ability for the deep money, the deep pockets, the hedge funds, the institutions, They have not had that custodial opportunity, potential of several hundred billion dollars piling into this market over the next decade.
I think the hedge funds and some of the more mainstream money was attracted to the potential, the story, the sex, the sizzle, the big gains. But that could be over as far as I know. I mean, you know, that money could have already been put to work. I mean, I don't know that any more money is coming, especially with the magnitude of the decline that we've already seen. You know, so I don't know that more money is going to be rushing into the space. I think, you know, individuals, if they want to get involved in cryptocurrency, they don't need a fund manager to take 2 and 20. I mean, anybody could just go online and buy cryptocurrencies. I mean, so I don't even see the value add by having a fund manager do it for you. You know, and in fact, I think you lose a lot of the so-called benefits of owning the cryptocurrencies if you, you own them through a hedge fund or through an ETF or something like that. So I don't know. I mean, there's a good chance that, that trade is over with, that there was the hype of that.
Yeah, it's baked into the cake. So what you're saying is other markets and other times in history where these large institutions, by law, they have a fiduciary responsibility, custodial, someone who carries the financial assets on their books for them. Case in point, look at Goldman Sachs, all right? Not only have they just created their own Bitcoin trading desk, but now they're talking about providing custodial services for hundreds of billions of dollars.
Gold money, you know, which I've been talking about, you know, where you can buy gold and silver, they, you know, they now let you trade Bitcoin, Ethereum, and they provide, you know, cold storage and stuff like that. And they're making a lot of money, actually. People are buying and selling. I mean, there's a lot of commissions. But, you know, I think a lot of the fund managers, I mean, are reluctant to, because I do believe that when these cryptocurrencies collapse and investors lose money, a lot of the investors are going to sue the financial advisors that got them in and say, oh, you should have realized this was a scam and a Ponzi scheme. And, you know, who knows? I mean, you know, so I think there's a lot of risk for professionals, you know, getting, convincing people to get into this.
You don't see it as, let's say, 1995, 96 internet boom. You feel that we're 99, 2000.
The internet boom, you had actual companies that, even though they were losing money, people just believed that eventually they would make money, right? That was the whole idea. It was like a land grab for eyeballs and crypto space, and the whole world was going to change, and these online companies were going to reap these huge profits as a result of this big transition. And, you know, in a way, people were right. They're, you know, but all the profits were reaped by Amazon, although they actually didn't even reap any profits. They just reaped all the revenues. A cryptocurrency and like a Pets.com, at least with Pets.com, you were betting on the profits that Pets.com could generate by selling, you know, dog food on the internet, even if you believed they were going to have a profit. There was at least some type of viable long-term goal. If you're buying a cryptocurrency, that cryptocurrency itself can never generate a profit. It can never do anything. It is not a business. It is not an asset that is going to produce income and pay dividends. You're just buying something because you think the price is going to go up. You know, so it's sheer speculation. It's just not, it's not speculating on a business making a profit. It's just speculating that other people will want to buy what you just bought at an even higher price.
It might be a bit myopic, at least in one area. Let's juxtapose the greenback, fiat money, this versus what we're talking about, the potential here. I mean, it really is the difference between our local bookstore, which we all like, and Amazon.com. You have a Swiss Army knife in Bitcoin, Ethereum, and some of these other...
It's not even an improvement on the dollar or the euro or the yen. You know, just because the euro or the dollar is not backed by something doesn't mean that, well, we can just create a digital version that's backed by nothing either. You know, if we want to go back to real money, then we go back to gold. I mean, that is what we have. We have the ability to remonetize gold and use the internet, or even maybe even use blockchain to distribute gold. But you have to have money underlying a monetary system. You just can't decide that this cryptocurrency is going to be money.
There's a lot more going on here than just someone declaring it has value. I mean, we both agreed in the past here on the show that it requires a tremendous amount of energy to obviously mine and refine gold, silver.
It takes a lot of energy to mine it, but once you've mined it, you have nothing to show for all the effort that you spent. You have a Bitcoin that has no intrinsic properties that delivers any use to anybody.
Most gold does have some other purposes, but 99% of it sits in storage vaults.
That's fine, because there is a demand for it outside that storage vault. People want to store it is because of all the other properties that make storing it worthwhile. You know, there's nothing to store in Bitcoin. And again, there's 1,500 digital currencies. I mean, there could be 15,000. There is an infinite number of coins that can be created. There's an infinite number of forks that can be created out of Bitcoin. They got Bitcoin Cash. They got Bitcoin Gold. They got, you know, whatever you want is out there. I'm here in Puerto Rico, right? All these, you know, there's hundreds of crypto guys now are in Puerto Rico, right? They're calling it, you know, Cryptopia. I don't know what. First of all, the irony of it is they're all here because of me. The first guys that came here, the first crypto guys that came here told me that they came here because they heard me on the Joe Rogan podcast, and I talked about being in Puerto Rico and all the tax benefits, and those were the guys that started everything. They're the ones that brought this guy Brock Pierce here, you know, and then Brock, you know, brought all his disciples. But so they're all here because of me. They just had a big conference, a cryptocurrency conference. And they didn't even invite me. You know, I would have gone. I get invited. I turn down invitations because I don't feel like going to Hong Kong and Dubai. But I would have gone to the Vanderbilt. It's a half-hour drive from my house. They didn't want a negative opinion there at this. Max Kaiser was here in Puerto Rico. Didn't even call me. In New York, he came and visited me in Connecticut.
You know, back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and you drive up to the movie theater and you watch, I don't know, Indiana Jones. Cryptos are just the VCR, the DVR. You don't see it as an evolution?
They're not going to be money. They're not going to be currency. I mean, they're not going to work. You know, they lack the fundamental properties that you need to be a viable monetary unit. I mean, it's just not going to work, period. And I think even if I was wrong, if it could work, the government would prevent it. The government would outlaw it if it could actually work.
We've just had the CFTC. We've had the IRS. We've had the SEC. They've all labeled Bitcoin and cryptos. One is calling it an asset class. One calling it a de facto commodity. The other calling it a pseudo-currency. And then I think another one said that it's a security. So here's the thing. They can't even get on board to define what it is. So you can't regulate, obviously.
You know I have a bank. Right, I have a Europe Pacific Bank, and I've had plenty of crypto businesses that wanted to open up accounts with us, and I'd love to do business with them, but I can't. I'm not allowed because of the AML concerns. No, none of the big banks will work with. Yeah, so it can't function. It cannot function as money if it's unbankable. Once the markets implode, once all the stories of these young kids who got rich because they put $1,000 into Bitcoin. And they took their bar mitzvah money and now they're millionaires. And, you know, I mean, you know, those stories are what was driving the narrative. But, you know, soon it's going to be about all the money that was lost. And, you know, it's going to be one of the, because here's what I know happened, right? So let's say somebody bought some Bitcoin in 2011, 2012. Let's say a guy threw a few thousand dollars into it and then cashed out a year ago. 2 years ago with like $100,000 profit, but didn't really cash out, took the money and bought, you know, other cryptocurrencies, built a diversified crypto portfolio, right? But never paid any taxes on the profits that he realized when he sold his Bitcoin. And maybe he thought, well, I don't even owe him because I'm not really selling. I'm just taking my Bitcoin and I'm buying something else. Then all these cryptocurrencies crash, right? And they end up losing back all their initial profits. Meanwhile, you have no money.
Yeah, the same thing happened with the internet bubble. You might recall that you had all these paper millionaires.
The way that happened was people that exercised employee stock options. So let's say you exercise an employee stock option and the stock was, you know, let's say $100 a share and you exercised it, but you didn't sell the stock. You wanted to hold the stock for a year because you wanted long-term capital gains. Well, let's say the stock collapsed and you never sold it, but you still owed the income tax based on what it was worth when you exercised. Yeah, so there were a lot of people that ended up with tax bills that were higher than the value of their shares.
So let's move on now to the investment du jour, certainly for 2018. Might be the Bitcoin of 2018. That's the precious metals. You want to make a case for better prices in 2018?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, when you talk about bubbles bursting, it's almost like there's a bubble in not wanting gold. You know, it's a reverse bubble. It's a lack of interest. I mean, even you look at all the retailers. I mean, my company, Shift Gold, right? I think our business is off maybe 80% from where it was, you know, over the past several years. I mean, and I think a lot of this has to do with the election of Donald Trump and the outlook and everybody thinking that he's going to make America great again. You know, almost all the gold buyers are Republicans. Let's face it, you know, they're the ones that are worried about big government inflation. And so since they're so optimistic now about Trump, they haven't been buying gold. And I do think that the crypto bubble has also stolen some of gold's thunder. Money that might have otherwise gone into gold went into cryptos. And I think, you know, people who didn't buy either might have been said, well, you know, why should I buy gold? Because people will just buy cryptos instead. So even though people weren't necessarily buying it themselves, they looked at cryptos as competition for gold. And so a reason not to buy gold, even if they weren't buying cryptos, they were just kind of assuming that other people would do it. But I think that as the crypto bubble pops, you know, that's, you know, something that can really be a catalyst for, you know, gold to really take off, silver to take off. But I think what's really going to propel the metals is going to be when the Federal Reserve has to acknowledge the underlying weakness in the economy that they've been, you know, pretending didn't exist. You know, the Fed has been talking about raising rates and shrinking its balance sheet and all this great stuff. When the Fed has to eventually acknowledge that it's not going to do any of that, that in fact we're going back to zero, that we're going to do QE4, I mean, I think gold's going ballistic. I mean, if it hasn't already taken off before the Fed admits that, you know, if the market hasn't figured it out on its own, when the Fed has to admit it, then it's going to take off. And of course, we're going to have huge deficits. I think that if we go into recession, when we will go into recession, obviously, I mean, it's inevitable, but the next recession, we're going to have budget deficits of $2 to $3 trillion a year. So, I mean, you're talking off the charts debt. So, you know, they were doing $85 billion a month in QE under Obama. They're going to have to do like $200, $250 billion a month in QE during the next recession. You think about all that money printing, all that inflation. I mean, this is the perfect environment for gold and silver. So, I mean, it certainly could start this year. I mean, gold's 1325 right now. You know, it was down to 1050 when the Fed started hiking rates. And gold has gone up almost 30% as the Fed's been hiking. Imagine how much it's better it's going to do when the Fed stops hiking. And then imagine when they start cutting again.
What do you see as the trigger point? Is there a level where the general public starts to get interested again? Are we going to have to cross 1500, or do we have to eclipse the previous bull highs?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think once we get above 1400, I think we can get above 2000 very quickly. I mean, I would be shocked to see that whole move happen in a couple of months, maybe even sooner. So I think it will excite some interest, but I think as the economy turns down, as measured inflation picks up, I think the Democrats are going to take Congress in 2018. That could do a lot to change the thinking, but certainly by 2020, when you've got that's going to really invigorate the gold market. We're going to have big tax hikes, big increases in government spending. I mean, who knows? You know, maybe we'll have to forgive all the student loans and stuff like that, and it's just going to be massive inflation. So somewhere along that timeline, you're going to have the public moving into gold in a big way. Of course, you know, they're going to be paying much, much higher prices for it.
Yeah, so what do you think about this theme we're seeing, permanent income?
Basic income. And look, socialism is having kind of a renaissance, right? Socialism is coming back. People just don't understand how dangerous and destructive socialism is. A lot of that has to do with our educational system and what a disaster public government schools are. The government has destroyed capitalism, you know, by, you know, it's given it such a bad name because what we have is not capitalism. The problems are the result of government that is, you know, that has involved itself in the economy. Yet it's always the free market that gets the blame and the government is seen as the solution. But it is amazing, you know, that so many people do not trust individuals, and they certainly don't trust individuals who decide to go into business, who incorporate, or businesses and corporations, which are simply businesses that have organized in a corporate form, but they simply represent a collection of individuals who have come together to form a business. But, you know, the only way a business can make money is by convincing people to voluntarily purchase their goods or services, which means they have to offer a better product, higher quality, lower cost. They must convince people. They must persuade people to give them their money. And the only way they can do that is if they improve their lives. So in capitalism, you have all these individuals individuals who are desperately trying to improve the lives of other individuals so that they can, you know, win their business. And yet so many people distrust private individuals who are running businesses. But those same people completely trust private individuals that decide to make a career out of politics. You know, and to me, it's the politicians that you can't trust because they don't have to win my support. They don't have to convince me of anything. They can force me to do what they want. They can take my money against my will because they can put me in jail or, you know, if I don't give them what they take, right? So that's who I fear. I fear political power. You know, I don't fear a business that's trying to convince me to buy their stuff because I don't have to buy it. Just takes whatever it wants.
Classic dilemma. You're talking about the entrepreneur versus the kleptocrat who's never created value, whereas the entrepreneur realizes that if I don't create value, I'm out of business.
I don't see how crypto gets you out of the loop from government. But my point is that the governments, they're like thugs. They're gangsters. That's what they are. But unfortunately, you know, one of the things that government does very well is they create a sense of fear. They create monsters, and they convince the voter government is needed to protect them from all these evil people that will hurt them, all these greedy capitalists that will exploit them and discriminate against them, and that they convince the public that we're your solution, the free market. And the beauty of the free market, though, is that, you know, it's the individual. You know, it's not about the you don't need the government to do things for you.
I think we need to differentiate. I mean, totally with you. Big government is a big problem. Obviously, we need our local police, our firefighters, all that stuff. I mean, but, you know, some of the basic necessities, sure. But, you know, we don't want this overarching kleptocracy making all the rules for their cronies and to their benefit. You're starting to sound a lot like Jeff Berwick down at Anarchapulco. Have you ever been down to the Anarchapulco conference?
No, I know who Jeff is. But I'm not an anarchist, you know. I mean, I don't think that government has no role in society. I believe it has a limited role, and that role is limited to defending individual liberty and private property. But I don't see a progressive role for government where government is redistributing wealth, picking winners and losers, trying to micromanage the economy and alter outcomes and get involved in the distribution of wealth. That is not what government is supposed to do. Government is just there to protect my stuff from theft, right? To protect my rights. You know, it's not there to make my life better in that. It's not supposed to give me things. It's not supposed to give me food, give me health care, give me housing, give me, you know, education. These are things I'm supposed to provide for by myself. I'm supposed to go out there and earn money to provide things for myself. You know, I'm not supposed to rely on the government to steal things for me from other people and then distribute what they stole to me in exchange for my vote.
Any other markets you're watching closely, are you concerned at all by the real estate echo bubble? I mean, we've already eclipsed the former zenith. Is that on your radar screen?
All the assets are in a bubble, right? That was the goal of Fed policy, was to inflate a bubble. Because remember, the Federal Reserve, they operate under the assumption that economies grow because of paper wealth, that if they can just goose the stock market and the real estate market, we'll all be wealthier on paper. And because we're wealthier on paper, we can borrow more money, we can spend more money, and somehow that's going to grow the economy. And this is complete asinine theory. It's like saying that wet side rocks cause the rain. What you actually do is you cause irrational decision-making and misallocations of resources. But the Fed inflated these asset bubbles. So every asset is overpriced because assets are always a function of interest rates. And if you keep interest rates artificially suppressed, you know, for a decade, then you're going to artificially inflate real asset prices, stocks, bonds, real estate, and all these asset bubbles are going to break. They're going to pop. The only way that you can stop them from popping is another round of massive quantitative easing. But I believe we're at a point now that will not work. You can't do it again without destroying the dollar. They try to give us another dose of monetary heroin, we will have an overdose, and the dollar will be destroyed, they will kill the dollar, and the price of gold is going to go ballistic.
The parallel you're drawing here is the 1970s, almost. But it looks like we could be looking at sort of a stagflationary nightmare.
Yeah, and not a happy ending. It's not like, because the 70s ended with Ronald Reagan and Paul Volcker, and we did the right thing. So this is going to be the 70s much worse, and it's not going to end well. Bigger crisis. I think we're going to have a monetary crisis. And, you know, gold went up during the 1970s from $35 an ounce to $850. That was a very big percentage gain. Silver was like a buck and it went up to 50. We could have a similar increase, maybe more, this time around.
Silver recently 81-1 on the gold to silver ratio. I mean, this is almost unprecedented. Do you see a relative value here and why?
Yeah, look, obviously silver is going to eventually catch, you know, it's not going to, you know, catch up to gold, but it's going to reduce that spread. It's going to come back to something more normal, whether it's 60-1, 50-1, 40-1. I mean, obviously the ratio is going to improve. But I do believe that from a monetary perspective, though, I think now, given the internet, maybe even the blockchain and things that companies like Gold Money are doing, I think it's a lot easier today to use gold as money than it was 100 years ago, 200 years ago. And one of the reasons that people use silver as money was because it was hard to use gold for very small transactions. But I think today it's very easy to use gold for small transactions. So you may not need silver as a monetary metal to the extent that we have in the past. It may mainly be an industrial metal. But even as an industrial metal, silver is still ridiculously cheap. But I think silver is going a lot higher, you know, and it's probably going to have a bigger gain than gold. But I don't think we're going all the way back to maybe 12-1 or 15-1. I don't know that it's going to be that big a move, but I do think that you're going to see silver closing that gap, you know, to a more realistic gold-silver ratio.
Gold Money, James Turk, big friends here of the show for over a decade. And, you know, their Gold Money crypto sort of pseudo idea, very solid. The only thing I would throw out here, keep in mind, this is not decentralized. There is that single point of failure, that risk, that exposure that exists when you're dealing with a single company.
You're dealing with Brinks. I mean, Brinks hasn't lost any gold in, I don't know, 150, 200-year history, however long it's been around. But the idea that you don't have to trust anybody when you're dealing with cryptocurrencies, I mean, there's a lot of third parties in there if you're using exchanges, so there's a lot of trust. And then the ultimate is that somebody's going to actually want your cryptocurrency in the future, because they may not. You know, I mean, and if nobody wants it, it has no value. There is absolutely no risk, in my mind, that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, there'll be no market for gold, right? The gold market is going to be around in 5 or 10 years. We have no idea if the Bitcoin market will exist in 5 or 10 years.
We would never advocate that anybody put in more than 1% of their disposable wealth into crypto. There are a lot of networking and protocol aspects that really parallel email, for instance. I mean, all the cases that are being made against the cryptos today, it's just a chorus from the 1990s. You know, oh, this internet, it's for bad guys and bad actors, and, you know, it's never going to go anywhere. Mostly that was entrenched interests doing everything they could to defend their turf. Obviously, I'm a believer. I haven't made a convert today. But I'm not going to give up. Peter Schiff, tell folks more about all the great stuff you're doing over there at Schiff Gold.
Yeah, well, if you want to buy some real gold, and, you know, Schiff Gold was probably, I don't know if we were the first, but maybe we were the second gold company to accept Bitcoin through BitPay to buy gold and silver. So if you have some Bitcoin and you want to buy some, you know, real gold as opposed to digital gold, you know, Schiff Gold will sell it to you. Gold Money, by the way, too, you could just go online and, you know, they'll accept Bitcoin and Ether in exchange for gold, silver, platinum, palladium. So, you know, open up an account, goldmoney.com, call us up at shiftgold.com. Whether you got paper money or fiat money, I mean, or cryptocurrencies, you know, buy yourself some silver, buy yourself some gold. If you have a bigger portfolio, you know, I only recommend 10 to 20% of a portfolio in gold. The rest should be invested in more traditional income-producing assets. I help clients invest money all around the world in stocks that I've handpicked with my team in countries like Singapore, New Zealand, Switzerland, Hong Kong. I mean, all around the world. I have managed accounts. I have proprietary mutual funds where I've, you know, picked the right companies. So give us a call. You know, go to our website, europac.com. You know, call us up or fill out something online. And, yeah, listen to my podcast. I'm going to do another one later today, my reaction to the FOMC rate decision and to the press conference. We're going to have the Jerome Powell, the first press conference he's had as Fed chief. So I'll be giving my reaction to that on my podcast. So you can get it at shiftradio.com. And also you can listen to it on my YouTube channel and, you know, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff. I have a, you know, I try to do what I can on social media to get the word out. But the interesting thing is, if I did run for president in 2020, I couldn't vote for myself because I live in Puerto Rico, and when you live in Puerto Rico, you surrender your right to vote. But that was okay because I also gave up my obligation to pay income taxes. So it's a trade-off that I'm willing to make. And, of course, you can run for president as a resident of Puerto Rico. You just can't vote.
And we certainly hope that you're looking out for some of the folks that went through that horrible storm down there. I mean, what a devastation in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, I have made quite a few charitable donations since I've been here. So some of the money I didn't send to Washington in taxes, I've used locally for hurricane relief.
Thank you, Peter Schiff.
Okay.
This is Robert Ian with the GoldSeek.com radio. In a vote just after midnight on Friday, the Senate passed a 2,232-page, $1.3 trillion omnibus spending bill and averted yet another quasi-government shutdown and set the stage for the next budget battle just ahead of the 2018 midterm elections. Now, the House approved its own version Thursday in, guess what, a bipartisan tally of 256 to 167. The Senate passed its bill 65 to 32. This temporary arrangement will fund the government until September, and in the process will increase both military and domestic programs, but, ding ding, will exceed budget caps to the tune of adding about $1 trillion. That's trillion with a T to the national debt. But who's counting? Like I have said for years on this broadcast, when faced with tough choices and real deadlines, politicians simply print the difference and then smile and hold press conferences about their bipartisan effort. Congress has its own opioid epidemic, and it's called spending our future production and further enslaving this generation and all those that come after it with these spineless, foolish, reckless financial behaviors that continue to betray the public trust. Because the additional debt incurred by this $1.3 trillion spending bill hasn't yet resulted in the markets correcting by 50% or more. Remember 2008. Most people won't pay any attention to the potential consequences of this irresponsible congressional behavior because of all the happy talk and bipartisan propaganda bandied about on mainstream media. Let's be real. 2,232 pages is impossible for any elected official to read and digest within a few days. And even more so, if amendments and new sections were being inserted wholesale into this document up until the time it was voted on. I seem to recall a health care bill that was jammed through Congress 8 years ago and was a major issue in the last presidential election. One famous quote regarding that legislation was that we need to pass it in order to find out what's in it. Ah, the more things change, the more they stay the same. I believe congressional swamp creatures of all stripes are scared for their very survival in the 2018 midterm elections. They know the midterm elections could well be an ELE, extinction-level event, for establishment politicians regardless of party affiliation. True, they may go to war over the budget ahead of the election. That's the traditional thinking. or they may simply reach another bipartisan agreement and try to go into the midterm elections as one big, happy, bipartisan family, with giveaways, extensions, and goodies for everyone. Because they know that if people vote out of anger, fear, disgust, or change on either side of the aisle, the replacement may well be a new breed of swamp creature, one that votes out legacy, establishment swamp critters who failed to change with the times. We can only hope. But we must hold our elected officials accountable for their debt-based financial addiction that puts all of us at increased risk for financial hardship. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.